I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection to order. It is Wednesday, April 22nd. We have a few bills on our agenda today. I'd like to first announce that House Bill 2189, 2199, House Bill 2141, House Bill 3004, and House Bill 2784 are all being carried over.
Where is that 27?
Did I get all of them?
Yes.
So the room is clearing out?
Did 2370, is that carried over?
No.
Okay.
So with that...
Can I look at the ones that you just marked up as carryover?
Waiting for...
The ones I circled, we're still going to
deal with. 1, 2, 3, 4,
you were ahead of him, ahead of me when I got to...
I always cheat off you.
On the list.
We would have been great in school together.
Start out with...
Thanks.
2673. Okay. So with that, I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2673.
Oh, he's still here.
Victoria, if you can give a brief summary of the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2673 requires event producers, promoters, and venue owners to disclose numbers and classes of tickets available for public sale and requires ticket resellers to disclose number of unsold tickets available for resale. Provides for enforcement as an unlawful trade practice. And you should have fresh -4 amendments in front of you.
So, committee, if you recall, this was Representative Gelser's bill, and... We sort of tasked her with going back and coming out with an amendment to ban the bots and put it under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. And I don't know if anybody's had time to look at this yet. So we're looking at the -4 amendments. Is that correct, Victoria? And do we have a fiscal impact and a revenue impact on this bill?
We do.
Mr. Chair, is the Representative Gelser or someone from her circle of influence going to available to answer some questions about this amendment?
Negative.
Okay.
It does not look like she is.
Terrific.
If you wish her to be, I suppose we could...
Is it your intention to adopt the amendment and move the bill today?
It is my intention to adopt the amendment and move the bill.
I was hopeful of being supportive of this bill, but I would just need to walk through these amendments a little bit to be made comfortable about what precisely it will do.
The -4s are the new ones, right?
Correct. The -4s are the amendment. And a representative, I think that her bill, essentially, if you go to section 1 of the bill, is what we have left with some definitions. And then...
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wingard.
I think my two main questions are, one, are the venue operators and the folks like the Blazers and others comfortable with this? I'd just like to make sure that we aren't doing anything that would negatively impact, and I know they originally had concerns with the bill. And then my other question is about whether or not we're confident with this definition, section 1B, about entertainment event. I realize it is probably identical to what was in the original bill, but are we confident that we are doing what we want to do without necessarily dragging people and events into our bill that may run up against it, and and find themselves in unlawful trade practices. I'm just concerned that's a very, very broad definition, and I was just hoping that somebody advocating for the bill would be able to reassure me that the right people have looked at it, and that I guess what we refer to in this building as stakeholder groups are okay.
Yes, I think the representative indicated that when she appeared last time she was here, that Representative Bruin and her had met with the stakeholder groups. Whether or not they've specifically reviewed the Dash 4 amendments, I know they were comfortable with the concept. With that, if you're not comfortable, I can we can ask Representative Gelser to come down and answer, or Representative Bruin to come down and answer those questions. So
I think it's a good bill.
Yeah, I do too, but I will close the work session on House Bill 2673. And Cindy, if you can give Representative Gelser's office a call or Representative Bruin's office a call to see if either one of them have time to talk to us.
Which one? Mr. Chair? Or maybe at least get clarification. We have Dash 1, Dash 2, Dash 3, and Dash 4. And it doesn't look to me like the Dash 4.
But we're not in work session
I'm
right now.
I'm sorry.
Right
I just,
now.
Well, I understand that. I was hoping that someone, never mind. Maybe you could ask a question of them. But
yeah,
maybe we can just get them to
When we get somebody down here, we will.
Sorry.
Okay, that went well. So let's.
This is the one.
So let's open up a work session on House Bill 2527. Victoria, will you give us a summary of House Bill 2527?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2527 requires elected officials and state agencies that provide electronic information to the public to disclose any embedded tracking features, exempts information obtained through use of electronic tracking features from public records and disclosure requirements. And we do have a fiscal and revenue statement.
Thank you. Committee, this was another one of Representative Gelser's bills, and she previously testified on this bill, and I think the committee was comfortable moving this bill forward. All we were waiting for was the fiscal statement, which we now have in hand, with a minimal expenditure impact.
2527.
So, have we already adopted amendments to this
bill? There are no amendments.
There are no amendments to this bill. So I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Riley.
I move House Bill 2527 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves House Bill 2527 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recall a comment that was made last time we discussed this bill, and it was Representative Wingard, and I appreciated his comment about, and maybe this is something we can urge or encourage on the Senate side, but that would be to provide the language for us in terms of what that should look like, notifying people of what this bill does. So I don't know if we can, you know, if we have that opportunity, but it would sure be nice, and I'll be voting for this bill. But I do think if we could provide the language of what that would look like within the bill, it would take a lot of guesswork and the ambiguity out of there. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate the comment. I think the representative did testify to that being a very simple statement, I'm sure legislative administration could probably supply us with something like that down the road, but maybe the Senate would like to clarify that further. I'm not quite as concerned about it, but it's a good point that we would make a statement that's accurate and doesn't get us into trouble. So with that, any other discussion on the bill? Cindy, could we have a roll call vote on House Bill 2527?
Representative Barton?
Excused.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
No.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
I'm an aye.
Vice Chair Widener?
Excused.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2527, having received required votes, passed to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
That's scary.
The lesson is, if you can keep Representative Winger confused, he'll vote yes.
With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2527.
Not the only way to get me to vote.
Representative Gelser will carry this bill on the floor.
Cash it up.
Okay. Let's see who's in the audience here. And some crazy moment. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3145. Victoria, can you review House Bill 3145 for us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3145 requires large employer group health insurers to submit premium rates to Director of Department of Consumer and Business Services for approval, establishes information to be provided by insurer and criteria to be considered by director, creates process to challenge order in contested cases, and allows award of attorney fees against insurer in favor of prevailing party.
Thank you. And I assume that the committee received a letter from the Oregon Health Fund Board. I just wanted to make sure that's on the record.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
I assume they did.
Yes. I do have a letter I'd like to read into the record from a constituent that I think you might be interested in.
On House Bill 3145? Certainly.
This was from a constituent of mine. Teresa, don't you laugh. I wanted to read it to you, but...
Before you start, I see Representative Gelser is here. I know she's in another committee, and maybe...
Back to the other one?
Yeah, let's go. Let's jump around a little bit. Excuse me. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3145 and open a work session on House Bill 2673. Thank you, Representative Gelser. If you could come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Yes, thank you, Chair Holvey, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sarah Gelser, representative from Corvallis, and always delighted to be to get a special invitation to your committee.
Well,
your colleague is down testifying in front of my other committee and doing a very fine job.
Well, I appreciate you coming on short notice, and I thought we might be able to get through this bill without you, but we did accomplish one of them, but this one we did have Representative Wingard had some questions about House Bill 2673 and the Dash 4 amendments, which I believe are the only amendments that we're adopting to this bill.
Correct. Chair Holvey, these amendments reflect the summary, when I summarized what I thought that you asked me to do last time, these are those.
Yeah, I got that far. So I appreciate that. I guess one of the questions that Representative Wingard had asked, which I think the committee has an interest in knowing, is we know that you and Representative Bruin had worked with stakeholders on this issue and whether or not they were okay with this bill.
Representative Holvey, Representative Wingard, as we worked previously on this bill, the concerns that were raised were not with the bots. In fact, the concern was that we did not have bots in the original bill, and the word bot doesn't actually appear in the bill. It's just fun to say,
mm-hmm.
But the software that interferes with ticket sales. So once we had the other amendments, there were not concerns that were raised to us, except for that they should be applying broadly. So it's my... I am not aware of any opposition to the bill, to my knowledge.
And to follow up, they had no opposition to the definitions in the underlying previous bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the concerns that were expressed to Representative Brune and I on the previous set of amendments were related to that disclosure, the disclosure element in terms of who would be responsible for disclosing a number of tickets. That issue is now gone. There were no concerns that were raised to us about the bots applying to any venue because that really is a third party that interferes with the sales practices of any of these operators. This doesn't cause any of the operators or stakeholders to do anything different unless they are a company that that either sells or manages this type of software that inappropriately interferes with the sale of tickets.
And so the way I read this Dash 4 amendment, the definitions were in the original bill, and the only thing this bill does is in under Section 1, subsection 2 seems to be the main thrust of the bill, where it reads a person may not intentionally sell or use software, the purpose of which is to circumvent, thwart, interfere with, or evade a control or measure, including a security measure or an access control system that an operator or reseller establishes or uses to ensure an equitable distribution, sale, or resale of admission of tickets for an entertainment event. That's essentially the entire bill, except for the penalty.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is essentially the entire bill. The other change that you'll notice in the front, what was removed, we had narrowed the definition of what an event was only for those disclosure purposes because we were trying to get at those four or five over 10,000 seat events. Mm-hmm. So that language that was in the bill previously has been removed because this bill essentially is something very different than what we brought you initially.
Thank you. Representative Wingard, a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you talking about your definition of venue originally in the bill was removed?
Yes, I believe. And I'm sorry, I wasn't.
It was in yes. Section 1.9.
All that's removed.
Sub 9.
Yeah. Lines 5 through 28.
Yes. Mr. Chair, the only reason I just immediately started to think of things like Fandango. And people that do things irregardless. I know what you were trying to get at, and I thought we had pretty universal agreement on the idea of getting after these bots on things like Hannah Montana concerts and stuff like that. But I just looked at this Section 1 sub B and just was concerned that we could run up against somebody's normal business practice. And you and I, we spoke about this at the last hearing. So I guess at this point, I'm comfortable that as we send this over to the Senate, there are, I'm sure, well-paid people who will become appropriately alarmed if they need to, that something needs to be narrowed or worked on the Senate side. So I'm happy to support the bill.
And Mr. Chair, may I briefly address that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that the place that this is addressed is if you're a movie theater and you're working through Fandango or you're Fandango and you have a relationship with a movie theater, which is the venue and is also the operator. If you skip down to number 2, which is what the bill is, it is circumvent, thwart, interfere with, or evade a control or measure, including a security measure or an access control system that an operator or reseller establishes or uses or ensure an equitable distribution, sale, or resale of admission tickets. I mean, clearly, an organization like Fandango is working in cooperation with the operator of that entertainment event, which is the movie. They have a clearly established relationship. This would apply in those places where the operator of the movie house or the playhouse or the sports arena was being taken advantage of by not a bad actor, a bad apple that was that was Representative Gilliam and Representative Buckley that were trying to undermine the marketing efforts of the person that owns the event. And I think that's why there weren't concerns from the stakeholders, because this is actually a protection measure not just for consumers but also for the operators of events and managers of venues.
Thank you.
Representative Cowan.
With some trepidation, just so I understand, it's only the Dash 4 that you are interested in having passed then, and my reason for that question is my notes say that there was clarification of the type, size and type of event, very narrow not to exceed $10,000, but you've decided to forego that. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair Holvey, Representative Cowan, that was going to apply to the provision that you had to disclose how many tickets were actually available, and we got rid of that.
So just dash four.
So just dash four only, and you'll have a really good bill that will help people purchase tickets appropriately for events they wish to attend.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time out to come down and refresh our memories on what we were doing with this bill. We've got it, I think. And are there any other questions? Representative Gilliam?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So with that, I'd entertain a motion. And Representative, you can dismiss yourself because I know you're busy.
Thank you.
If you wish.
I might wish to hear the vote, but I'll wait in the back room.
To adopt the dash four amendments, please.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
Thank you. I move the dash four amendments to House Bill 2673.
Representative Riley moves the dash four amendments be adopted to House Bill 2673. Discussion? Is there any objection to adopting the dash four amendments? Seeing none, they're adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
I move House Bill 2673 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves House Bill 2673 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The concern I have for this bill has nothing to do with my esteemed colleague. We don't have to say the moniker thing in committee, do we? Representative Gelser, and I'm impressed by the bipartisan nature of it coming forward. I teased them about the Hannah Montana bill, but I appreciated the fact they wanted transparency, and we don't want kids or adults or anybody ripped off. The concern I have is that this is what happens. We have a very full agenda in this committee, and we switch to another, I'm sure, very important issue. But to me, we shift to a completely different issue that opens up another area, namely the bots. The bots are not something I know about. Now, I am encouraged by the fact that Representative Riley, who knows a lot about bots, supports this bill. That has a lot. That's comforting. But then Representative Krieger, who may be just slightly more challenged with technology than I am, also supports the bill. So you can see my dilemma. I just think that the bot issue probably deserves, not this session, a larger statewide look as far as how it affects all markets. And to just suddenly launch into the bot question as an amendment after all the testimony and sort of the original direction concerns me. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very much like flower shops.
Thank you, Representative Gilliam, and I would share your concern. However, I think the subsection 2 of section 1 is very specific and fully support that piece. I think it's a good piece regardless. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Wingard,
I wanted to thank Representative Gilliam for explaining his no vote this time.
Thank you. Cindy, can I have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wingert?
Aye.
Vice Chair Widener?
Excused.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2673, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, did we just get a unanimous vote in this committee?
We did.
Representative Wyden was absent.
Did he vote for it anyway?
He did.
With that, I will have Representative Gelser carry the bill, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2673.
I was having trouble. I didn't say House.
I'm going to keep everybody jumping around and open a public hearing on House Bill 2370. Senator Walker.
2370.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and I just got a text that they need me in committee to do work sessions, so I'll make this quick. I am here on House Bill 2370 for a good old-fashioned gut and stuff. You know when gut and stuff starts happening, then we're close to closing down the session. This is a bill from my side of the building that I had constitutional problems with, Senate Bill 432, and it simply would require insurance companies to provide a discount to motorcyclists who take the Team Oregon or any other training course, sort of like driver's ed for you all who drive automobiles, and these are classes for us who ride motorcycles. Most motorcycle company or insurance companies in Oregon do offer the discount already, but they don't always do, so I brought this bill forward to do that. The insurance division says it's an additional 30 filings a year for them, probably, and it's not even a speck of dust on the planet, so they're okay with it. The insurance companies testified in committee, and they were okay with it. So what was my constitutional problem? Probably the committee. But I'm hoping I don't encounter the same problem over here. So that's why I'm here, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to gut and stuff this bill. It was the only one we could find. Any questions?
Questions for Senator Walker. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we believe insurance companies are already doing this voluntarily, but to the extent that they would be required to do that, if they weren't doing it on their own, I guess my question is, doesn't this begin to create some cost shifting where they, if they offer a discount, if this discount doesn't make sense to them and therefore they don't offer it and they are then forced to do it, then they have to shift that, they have to recover that cost on the other motorcyclists they're insuring or make it up somewhere else if they don't believe on their own that it's worth the discount. Am I?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wingard, you're kind of getting there. I think what it says is that, you know, certainly someone could shop around and find an insurance company who does offer the discount, but I will tell you I'm likely to pass a bill this session that requires all motorcyclists, newly endorsed motorcyclists, to receive training, and it'll be phased in over a five-year period. And so at that time, every motorcyclist will be getting trained, and it would behoove an insurance company to be competitive and offer these discounts. It's really a matter of market. If they want to be competitive, they should be offering the discounts. So I'm just saying, why not do it? Because you allow it for motors, for automobile drivers. There, I don't think there's an insurance company in the state that doesn't offer a discount for students who take driver's ed. So this is really what I'm saying. And I don't think there's any cost shifting involved. It's just offering a discount. They just lose a little bit more out of their pocket. And it's not a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Don't see any other questions for you, and I know you're busy and need to get back to committee.
There is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you hear from motorcycle gangs? Groups. I meant to say groups. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gill, I am a motorcycle rider myself. And yes, I did. They love the bill. Actually, Bike Pack endorses this bill. And Bike Pack is neutral on my other bill that I hope you get to see as soon as I pass it through the Senate. So I have had conversations with them, and they like the bill. Thank you.
And I'm sure she could send them by your office. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to thank you for bringing this forward. I'm a motorcycle enthusiast as well, and I think anything we can do to encourage people to sign up for the classes that are available out there and encourage the insurance industry to recognize that safer riders are better for all, I think this is a step in the right direction. So thanks for bringing it forward, and hopefully we can get the support it needs and moving on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Matthews. We have had 6 motorcycle deaths since the beginning of the year, 5 of them in the first 2 weeks of spring, and I don't believe any of those had taken the Team Oregon training or any kind of training, and it really is pretty critical because one of the biggest groups of riders now is my age group, the baby boomers, and we think that we can do everything that we used to do when we were younger, or maybe we got on a motorcycle when we were 16 or 17 and thought it was great, and we didn't need to learn how to do it all over again, but you do. And I'm pleased to have taken the class, and I'm happy to tell you that two of the clerks over in the Senate side have now taken the class and came to tell me today they are Team Oregon certified. So I'm very excited about it, and I really do think if insurance companies would offer this discount, it would encourage more people to take the training, though we will also do that in another bill. I'm about saving lives and making sure people do their job, do their part to save their own life, and that's being informed and knowing how to ride your motorcycle.
Thank you, Senator. I might add, I never took one of these courses, and when I was 20 years old, I got up off the ground and walked away from a motorcycle. I've never been on one since. So,
there's something, Mr. Chair, about getting on a horse again. It's a little bit similar.
I think this
I'll
is
help
a,
you.
This is a good bill, I think, and I appreciate you bringing it forward.
All right, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know I ride because I rode my bike to your house one time.
That's right.
So all right, thank you.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2370. Committee, I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 2370. And entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 1 Amendment.
So moved.
Representative Tomei moves we adopt the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill 2370. Discussion? Is there any objection to adopting that amendment? Seeing none, it's so adopted. And with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2370. Okay, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3145. Representative Krieger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. We all received letters from constituents, and I wanted to read one to you that I received. What are we going to do about health care in Oregon? Our new plan at Freeman has a $15,000 a year deductible at $668 a month per employee and family. Unless you have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of bills, which makes it worth it, you're slowly going thousands of dollars a year or more into debt just paying your deductibles. Our hours and wages are going down. Our health care costs went up 20% on the plan, which is much worse than our last one. The state needs to put a stop to this crap. Pretty vocal crap. And have companies use vouchers to employees to get their own insurance. We could use Amanda's, and that's his wife, I assume, but mine would be primary, so we'd have to pay the deductible first. The hospital pays their employees back the deductible at the end of the year. You guys want to make a difference in Oregon workers? This needs to be addressed. We can't afford to live anymore. Signed, Tyson Krieger.
Thank you. I'm not sure if that was in support of the bill or not. Thank you for reading that in the record. With that, I'd like to have Teresa Miller come up, please. And we'll just start out with you. Good afternoon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Miller, and I'm the acting administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. It has been several weeks, I think, since the committee heard testimony on three bills related to changing the department's health insurance rate review process. Those bills were House Bill 2432, 2433, and 3145, the bill before you today. So I just wanted to briefly remind you of some of the major provisions contained in the two bills that were brought forward by the department. House Bill 2432 requires the department to open a 30-day public comment period prior to making a decision in an individual, portability, or small group health insurance rate filing. And the bill also provides the opportunity for a public hearing in certain circumstances. And House Bill 2433 would strengthen the department's rate review standards by setting out key factors that are routinely considered as part of our rate review process. And more importantly, and most importantly, the bill specifically authorizes the department to consider factors such as investment income, insurer profits, and surplus levels when considering a rate filing. As I mentioned in my testimony several weeks ago, these bills were the department's proposals to strengthen our rate review standards, increase the transparency of our rate review process, and provide an opportunity opportunity for meaningful public input into our process. As you may recall, you also heard testimony on House Bill 3145, the bill before you today, which is sponsored by Representative Shields and others, that I believe was designed to accomplish some of the same goals. Following the hearing, I was asked by the chair to work with proponents of House Bill 3145, as well as industry, to see if we could come up with a single proposal that accomplishes the goals stated, but does so in a way that's workable for industry. The amendment before you today, and I'm talking at least about the Dash 4s, and I believe the Dash 5s are very similar to the Dash 4s, and that is the result of the conversations that I've had over the last several weeks. I would not characterize this amendment as a consensus amendment, and I think you'll hear more about that today. I would expect that you'll hear from industry that they would like additional modifications, and I think you'll also hear from proponents of House Bill 3145 that they would like to go further. But with that, I would like to just walk through some of the changes that we made in the Dash 4 amendments to the original proposals that you saw. In response to concerns expressed by carriers, we removed portability coverage from the public hearing and the rate review standards provision of the bill. And this is sort of throughout the amendments you'll see this. We have a separate rate review statute for portability, and including portability in this bill would have created two separate statutes with two separate standards for reviewing portability coverage and rates, and we certainly didn't intend to do that. So it wasn't our intent to include portability in the first place, so we're just taking that out. Secondly, and this is in Section 2, Sub 3, to address concerns expressed by carriers about the number of public hearings that could potentially be triggered under the bill, we established that rate changes must meet an 8% threshold before triggering a public hearing. And this is in addition to the thresholds that were contained originally in House Bill 2432. So the rate increase or decrease would have to be in excess of 8% to trigger a rate filing, and that's only if 10 or more policyholders or an organization representing 10 or more policyholders had requested a hearing in that case. The next change we made in Section 2, Sub 5, to address concerns expressed by carriers regarding the timeliness of approval or disapproval of rate filings, we clarified that filings must be approved or disapproved within 90 days after the proposed rates are filed. Current law allows the department a total of 60 days to take action, 30 days initially, with an additional 30 days if we notify the insurer. Under the bill as amended, the department is allowed an additional 30 days to take action on a rate filing, only in those cases where a public hearing is triggered. In Section 2, Sub 6, we clarified that the department will give notice of the approval or disapproval of a rate filing to the insurer and to the public. And in Section 3, Sub 3, to alleviate carriers' concerns about the ability to meet the 90-day rate review deadline, we reduced the public hearing notice requirements from 21 days to 14 days.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Could we ask that you go to the various lines? It would be easier for you to follow in the
bill. Sure.
Thank you.
Do you want me to go back?
No, just the last one.
Okay, so the last one. Section 3, Sub 3.
Okay, page 3, line 22.
Got it. Go ahead.
Okay. Section 4 is actually a brand new section. This was a section we added to address another concern expressed by carriers. This section provides an exception to the current law, which limits health benefit plan rate changes to one per 12-month period. This exception would apply when a rate increase is subject to a public hearing and the rate isn't approved until after the anniversary date or the effective date. Under those circumstances, a carrier would not be allowed to collect the premiums until the rate's approved, but allowing an exception to existing law would allow a carrier to not have to change their anniversary date, essentially, and that's what Section 4 is attempting to do. Section 6, and this is line 24 on page 4. Section 6 is actually an entirely new section of the bill. And this is proposing to change the process that we have for identifying confidential information contained in a rate filing. In the 2007 session, the legislature passed House Bill 3103, which made rate filing information public immediately upon the department's receiving the information. And it requires that we keep information confidential if the carrier identifies such information and makes an argument that that information essentially meets a two-part test, that it's a trade secret and that it would be harmful to competition if that information was released. House Bill 3103 provides that the department make a determination regarding whether such information meets that two-part test, and that determination is subject to appeal to an administrative law judge. Over the course of the last year, we've discovered that this process is not working as originally intended. Because carriers file different rate filing documents and then therefore request different information be kept confidential, each one of these rate filings and requests for confidentiality requires a significant amount of analysis and review on the part of department staff, and we have to complete that review and the appeals or any appeals that might result before that information is released to the public. The amendments in this bill would change this process and require the department to create rules that would first identify the information that should be contained in any given rate filing, which is actually something that carriers have asked us to do, and second, would identify the information that constitutes a trade secret that would be harmful to competition if released. So this, I think, would allow us to standardize our process and essentially address this confidentiality issue once and for all and not have to do it on a case-by-case basis, which has just become very, very difficult to do. Also, stakeholders will be invited to participate in the rulemaking and help us figure out which of these pieces of the rate filing would be kept confidential. And finally, Section 7, which is the section addressing the rate factors. And this is page 5, and Section 7 starts on line 1. Sub 4 is and sub 5 on page 6 are where we get into some of the rate factors. And you'll notice that we've included some factors that were in the original House Bill 3145 in addition to factors that were in the original House Bill 2433. We also made changes to some of the factors in the language to address some of the concerns raised by carriers. We also changed the language so it's clear that the department's consideration of all the factors is mandatory rather than discretionary. And finally, the amendment places the burden on insurers to establish that the proposed rates are actuarially sound, reasonable, and not excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory, and based upon reasonable administrative expenses. And with that, Mr. Chair, that's sort of a brief description. Unless you want me to go through each of the rate factors individually, that is a brief description of the changes that we've made in the Dash 4 amendments to the original bills.
Thank you. And with the committee's indulgence, I'm going to refer you now to the Dash 5s, just so you know, and then we'll open it up for questions. The only difference in the Dash 5s from the Dash 4s occurs on page 7 in a discussion with Representative Barton. We asked that line 25 on page 7 be deleted from the Dash 4 amendment, and that's what you'll find in the Dash 5s, I do believe.
Would you give me that line number and page number again, please?
It's line 25, I think, on page 7.
Line 25 on page 7.
Thank you.
And I,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Barton.
Thank you. Just by way of explanation, why I requested it. I don't know. Does everyone have the Dash 4s in front of them? It's mm-hmm. essentially just a deleted Section M. Mm-hmm. My request in no way should reflect on the esteem I hold for both the Director of ECBS and the Acting Insurance Administrator. I did feel, however, that we need to be somewhat restrained in the power we delegate to DCBS. And I think DCBS has done quite well for itself in that regard this session.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Tomei.
So am I to assume it's all of Section 6 and 25 down to 29?
No, it's essentially line 25 out of the Dash 4 amendments is deleted, and that's all that's deleted.
125 page...
So your Dash 5s do not have subsections, or it would be subparagraph M. that states any other factors adopted by the director by rule has been deleted in the dash five. It has been deleted out of the dash four amendments, and so the dash five amendments do not have that statement in there.
So we're looking at the dash five, so I may, yeah. Mr. Chair. Is that correct? On page seven, correct? Line 25, correct?
Not in the dash.
Line 25 and the dash four.
Line 25 and the dash fours.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That one sentence has been
removed. That one sentence has been deleted. It is not in the dash fives.
Thank you.
Kim. Sorry, I'm glad you helped me clarify that.
Yeah.
So, essentially, out of the dash four is line 25. The subparagraph M is being deleted in the dash fives, and that's the only difference between the two amendments. And I bring you that because it's the chair's intent to adopt the dash fives amendments. And Ms. Miller was describing the dash fours. So,
okay.
Representative Matthews.
Mr. Chair, would it be wrong to ask Ms. Miller to comment on the difference between the dash five and dash four in terms of her position on that?
I'd appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
I'm not sure if fairness has anything to do with it, but Ms. Miller, would you like to comment on that change?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have no problem with that deletion. We're fine. If Representative Barton doesn't trust the agency, that's okay with us. And we're fine with that change.
Besides, she's only acting.
Exactly. It may not be my problem, so.
I asked. Thank you. Are there further questions about this bill or this amendment for Ms. Miller? Not seeing any at this time. I hope you might stay for the rest of the discussion on the bill in case somebody decides they have a question for you. That might be helpful.
I'll be here. Thanks.
Thank you. Next up, I have Laura Etherton and Marcia Kelly. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Sure. Representative Chair Holvey and members of the committee, my name is Laura Etherton with OSKIRC. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of these amendments that you have before you today on 3145. Rising health care costs, as Representative Krieger, his constituent, put so articulately, are a giant problem for businesses, for families all across the state. The legislature is considering a full complement of bills this session to address this very, very important issue. Much of it, in fact, is happening just down the hall right now, simultaneous with this committee. However, this bill and this effort to contain the rising cost of health insurance costs and to update the DCBS approach to update health insurance rate review process, the process, the standards, and the factors, is a key part of those overall health insurance rate increases to rein those in. Now, as we're looking at 3145, these amendments, this definitely is a compromise package. We wanted to go a lot further this session in a number of regards, and I think that comparison between the original 3145 and these amendments is pretty clear. That said, we feel very, very strongly that this is a very important step forward in order to strengthen the standards that DCBS looks at when reviewing rates, to expand the factors that a health insurance rate hike that will be brought to a family or a business will, that those standards will need to be met, and that the process should be opened up for public comment, for possible public hearing, and that light be shown on the whole process. These are a good compromise. We would, of course, like to go further, and we'll continue to monitor the process and monitor the rate increases that are continuing to go on, but agree that this is a really important first step and urge you to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Hovey, thank you for your leadership on this issue. Chair Hovey and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm a member of the Public Policy Committee for the American Association of University Women, or AUW, Oregon. We have 2,000 members in the state and our branches, which are our organizational level. At the local level, branches range from Ashland up to Portland, Pendleton, down to Medford and Klamath Falls. We support the Dash 5 amendments for House Bill 3145. Medical care and insurance coverage that covers medical costs are really important to our members. And as I point out in my written testimony, the National Bureau of Labor Statistics released April 15th release pegs the Consumer Price Index Urban Medical CPI-U at a compounded annual rate of 4%. The unadjusted 12 months ending March 2009 was 2.8. Yet, at the same time, many insurers in this state are raising both individual and group markets in the double digits. For women, obtaining individual or small individual coverage is a higher burden on them. And why do I say that? That's because women earn 78 cents on the dollar for men. It's for college-educated women in Oregon, the figures were just released, it's 76 versus a dollar. And for all ages added, it's 78 cents for the dollar. That means that this month we celebrate, and on Tuesday we'll be in the Capitol, celebrate Equal Pay Day in the month of April, the month that women earn as much as men do the year before. They finally catch up to men's 2008 pay. So it's an important economic issue for women. Women also have a problem in that they are oftentimes in a higher age range when they become dependent to get individual insurance, either through divorce or widowhood. And they also tend to be more part-time workers where they may not have coverage and then may need to have individual coverage. So this bill is needed because anything that we can do with health care reform and to make health insurance more affordable will help. We want to make sure that we have rational and fence posts for making rate adjustments that in this state so that all members of the all people in the state can really appreciate that. We can't afford to wait, so please support House Bill 3145, the Dash 4s.
Questions from the committee? Not seeing any at this time. I appreciate your comments today, and also appreciate your involvement in trying to come up with a compromise bill on this. And I know it wasn't exactly what your organization was looking for, but I think it is a good step. So thank you very much.
Chair Hovey and members, I also just want to thank the chair for making us do that, for bringing us together and asking DCBS to work with a number of folks to work out issues and see where we could agree and move forward with a step that really, I think, can do Oregon proud. Thank you.
Thank you. And next up, I have Dave Fiscom and Carrie Walker. Good afternoon, gentlemen. You'd state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the record. Dave Fiscom here for Providence Health Plans. We appreciate the chance to comment today on Health Bill 3145, the vehicle that appears to be moving someplace for health insurance rate review this session. We've had the chance to look at the Dash 5 amendments only for a day, thanks to your staff, District Chair. We know they're very similar to the Dash 4s, and so we wanted to show up today. We had a little mixed emotion about whether it made sense to testify today, but before you adopt the Dash 5s into the bill, we thought we ought to make at least a few comments to you about our concerns relative to this legislation, albeit substantial improvements from the original. So in the spirit of compromise, this is moving for us in the right direction. I should say for the record, genuinely so, that we do appreciate the initiative Ms. Miller has taken to talk to several of us over the weeks about this bill. I have told you before that we have in Oregon what I call an effective arm's length friendly relationship as a regulated entity with the regulator, and that has been proven to be true again this time, and we thank her for her initiative to talk to us. At the same time, knowing that you might be moving ahead on this bill today, we wanted to appear to make a few comments to you about the concerns we have remaining. And in the spirit of that, I've asked the chief underwriter for Providence Health Plans, who's appeared before you at least once before, Carrie Walker, to share these concerns with you in the spirit of my introduction for him. So with that, Mr. Chair, and with your indulgence, we'll turn to my right to Mr. Walker.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Hovey and committee members. For the record, my name is Kerry Walker. I work with Providence Health Plans, and I'm here today on behalf of Providence Health and Services to speak in regards to House Bill 3145, the Dash 5 version. I want to start by saying that we appreciate the work, the collaborative work that the insurance division has done by reaching out to the insurers, including Providence and other stakeholders, in an effort to create a legislative proposal that satisfies a number of different interests. We've had helpful discussions with the divisions about the adjustment to the rate filing review process. However, we believe that House Bill 3145, including the Dash 5 revisions, does continue to contain provisions that would impede or threaten the viability of the health plans in the longer term. And we think that it's important to understand the full impact should this bill be realized in its current format. Overall, we have strong concerns about the expansive reach of the insurance division into the operations of the insurance carriers. We do support greater transparency in the rate review and approval process, but we cannot support proposals that limit our ability to react to changes in the market and set strategic business practices across our entire lines of business, both the regulated lines of business as well as the unregulated lines. Speaking specifically to Section 2, and this pertains to the hearing and the the hearing section. In the health insurance business, timing is critical. The proposed language increases the period of time between when a filing is made and when approval of the filing can be accepted or expected, rather, now extends that time period up to 90 days. This will likely result in increased claims cost projections. The primary concept being here, the further out that we need to make a claims cost projection, the greater risk is inherent in those cost projections. And so we are concerned about moving from what I think Teresa Miller references a 60-day period up to 90 days, and potentially could go even beyond that. We would support the 30-day comment period with no extensions, as this would allow us to reasonably predict expenses and better accommodate and anticipate the approval dates associated with the rate filings. Moving quickly on to Section 5, while we have no concerns about providing the division with our reasons for an increase or adjustment in administrative expenses, we are concerned about the incorporation of language that relies upon terminology of reasonable administrative expenses. We're concerned that this is subjective and undefined within the body of the bill as it's currently written. I would note that there is no consideration given for potentially imposed taxes or fees. in the CPI baseline reference figures. And specifically, I'm contemplating the assessments that currently accrue under the Oregon Medical Insurance Program. If you're familiar with this program, the rate at which the OMIP assessment has been made to carriers over the last several years is run at a multiple of the general CPI rate. And asking us to withstand and pass through this OMIP assessment fee and incorporate that within a reasonable administrative expense change is problematic. Moving to Section 7, we do feel that the review and approval or disapproval of rate filings should be made on an actuarial basis. We believe that carriers should be able to prepare a rate filing in accordance with objective and measurable standards as outlined in either statute or rule. The proposed bill increases the division's reliance on seemingly vague and arbitrary standards for a rate review. Specifically, and now I'm speaking within the specific rating factors to be considered under Section 7, we're concerned about the division's ability to consider an insurer's broader financial position. This appears to imply a requirement that would allow the division to consider financial performance in non-regulated small group markets or non-regulated individual market and require that perhaps surpluses accrued on other lines of business be used to subsidize and potentially limit the reasonable actuarial rate calculation for small group and individual.
Mr. Chair, can we ask questions as we go along because there's so much that he's covering.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you. So what other lines of business would Providence be involved in?
Representative Holvey, or Chairman Holvey, rather, Representative Tomei. And I'm speaking actually from on the basis of discussions that I've had in previous rate filings. Providence is involved in offering Medicare supplemental coverage, Medicare coverage, large group commercial business, and we may accrue surpluses or reserves on these businesses, on these lines of business, rather, that in our aggregated financial statements might then be viewed in the valuation of the rate filing as possibly available to be used to offset or required to be given credit on the individual line of business or the small group line of business which is being reviewed. We would maintain that each of these separate lines of business should be self-sustaining and that potential gains or surpluses made, and I'll use the example of Oregon large group commercial business, any surpluses accrued there should be used to moderate or limit the rate calculations for that large group book of business and not be considered as possible reserves to be applied against small group performance.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Back within Section 7, there is a rate factor that apparently would be viewed, be reviewed as any anticipated enrollment changes resulting from a proposed rate change. We believe that the expected enrollment changes is subjective and really not related to the cost benefit or the premiums relative to the claims cost in the particular line of business being reviewed. Additionally, language such as the review of cost containment efforts, we're concerned that this is subjective and intrusive into the product design and would be very difficult to quantify. I'm not aware that there are sound actuarial standards that could be predefined in rule that would allow an objective and measurable calculation that would be a step within the rate filing. I won't belabor this on a point-by-point basis, but I would like to emphasize that a number of the factors listed in Section 7 really, to my eye, have little or no basis in a sound actuarial review by the state in reviewing a carrier's rate filing. What we would propose is that any rate factors to be added as a part of this bill be defined in an objective way and measured consistently across all carriers. I'll close with that.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are some other things going on in this building on health care. I have not been monitoring them very closely. Perhaps you have. How does this dovetail with what may or may not be looming in, for instance, 2009?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, by 2009, I'm going to presume you mean House Bill 2009, because
I do.
It's the same year we're in, so I'll assume that you're talking about a bill, not a year.
I am.
I don't know that it would be possible to suggest that the provisions of the dash 5 to 3145 would, quote, dovetail, unquote, with what's going on in House Bill 2009. As one who's followed that process in a different committee for several months now, it's been very difficult to track and follow, though next door it's possible that that bill may even have been sent out of committee today or will be shortly. I think, as I recollect, we were on the dash 70 amendments within the last hours. There are provisions in an alternative to House Bill 2009 that some major health care providers, Providence among them, have developed, which are under consideration in the Senate, and there are some health insurance regulatory proposals embedded in that alternative to the House bill, which is poised to be adopted in some form or fashion in Senate Bill 856, a carrier for those provisions, and that bill may be moving forward. Ms. Miller was kind enough to point out to me before the hearing that in that bill, which some of us helped develop, there are in fact insurance regulatory proposals embedded therein as well, and in some cases they may be similar to the provisions in House Bill 3145, and that would be perhaps in part coincidental. So I don't think the efforts dovetail, Representative Gilliam. I think there are a whole host of efforts and a number of committees related to health care reform, and in particular the methods for financing health care reform. If you ask me what the biggest health care issue is at the Capitol in this legislative session, as a longtime health care lobbyist, I would say how you finance health care reform, including the health care taxes which have been proposed on both hospitals and insurers. Those issues are not yet resolved, so it would be hard to put a picture together that would be cohesive and organized and where we could understand exactly what we're doing and what the effect would be of all the efforts undertaken on cost. Our experience in the public affairs business is that the public is most concerned about cost, also, of course, quality and access, but I think the cost of health care is an important consideration, and how to drive down that cost is critical. I'm not sure I'm answering your question, so I'll stop and with that. And it's a discussion we can continue having.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks. Other questions?
Chair, I'd understand we need to have some way to measure the need and the appropriateness of rates. I think the department has to do that. But when you listen to the testimony, you look at the bill, you cannot tell me that there isn't a lot of work for that agency to do what they're saying they can do. I had a conversation with Speaker Hunt the other day. I had one with Representative Riley. I had one with several of the other chairs. Consistently, and by the way, also with Chip Trahoon, consistently we are seeing agencies minimize the revenue impacts for the purpose of getting what they want and not have to go down to Ways and Means. And if they don't want it, they up it. And I think this is a blaring example of it, and that's why I'll be no on the bill, because I don't think they're being forthright with us. Therefore, every one of us and these people are not making the right policy choices because we don't have accurate information. And I've been talking for the last several days, like I said, with Chip and the Speaker and others, and it is consistent in every committee.
Thank you, Representative Krieger. I don't know that I understand your statement. I've seen things like that in the past. I got to admit that I somewhat question whether a fiscal really existed or whether it didn't. And we don't have a fiscal on this bill at this point. So
The old one is what I'm referring to. Let's see. I don't know if we have one on the dash five or not.
I don't believe we have a fiscal on the old bill either, but...
Or it's a revenue impact. It's on the dash five.
That's a revenue impact.
That's
a revenue.
Yeah.
So with that, gentlemen, not seeing any other questions at this point.
Thank you.
I appreciate your testimony. I appreciate your comments as well. I think the discussion isn't over in this building on this bill yet, so... I appreciate your standing up for your industry and bringing forward some of your concerns. I did take note of them.
We'll be pleased to stay involved, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Miller, would you be so kind as to come back up just for a couple of quick questions? And mostly about a couple of the issues that were raised by Kerry Walker, I suppose, because my understanding may be a little bit different than his. So, and specifically about, I guess it would be under Section 2 of the bill, the 90-day issue, where the director shall approve or disapprove a rate within 90 days after the insurer files a schedule. And I think currently it's 60 days, but under the current law, doesn't that 60 days also oftentimes get expanded to much, much longer?
Mr. Chair, we try very hard not to have that happen. Current law gives us 30 days with the potential of an additional 30 days if we give notice to the insurer. We try very hard not to go beyond that. And my intention would be that, and again, we're only talking about in cases where a public hearing is triggered where an additional 30 days would be allowed. But that 30 days is as hard as, you know, as the 60 is now, I guess. And, you know, I went back and looked at some of our rate filings from 2008. In the cases where we went over 60 days, I would actually argue it was a good thing because there were things going on that we needed to look into. And so, you know, the alternative, I suppose, is that we could deny the request within the 60 days and then we get ourselves another 60 days. But we try not to operate like that. I think it's easier if we just work with the carriers. But there are cases where there are issues going on that we need to look at more closely, and sometimes they take us beyond the 60 days. But we try very hard to work to get these things done in a timely manner because we know how important that is to industry.
And along those lines, so this particular change doesn't really provide any more certainty for getting a rate approved or disapproved than the old language.
Mr. Chair, I think what I've pointed out to carriers as they brought up that issue is this doesn't change the issue that they have that 60 days. And again, the issue is we could deny within the 60 days and then get ourselves another 60 days, but I'm not sure that works as well for carriers either. So,
okay, thank you. That was the one of the questions I had. Has anyone else got further questions of Ms. Miller on this?
Mr. Chair, I do.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just continue to be concerned, like everybody is. Representative Krieger's letter from another Krieger. This letter is a great letter from Oregon Health Fund Board. I'm glad you distributed it. We want to control premiums and what people are paying. It's killing them. Your job isn't health policy. This committee's job is not health policy. And yet, to me, if we don't solve health policy, and this is just going to be one big circle, I'm sorry,
then we do this. You're trying to do what you can. I appreciate, I know what your motivation is. And yet, until those other questions are answered, I think premiums will go up because people have to comply to the regulation that we're putting in place, which you may disagree with, but that's my suspicion. So it's very frustrating, particularly with the kind of reform that is rumored and looming that I've already mentioned. That isn't a question, but it is my frustration.
I can appreciate that.
Thank you. And Ms. Miller, do you have any comments on any of the other concerns that were raised?
Yeah, I think the concern that was raised about the line of business and trying to find the language that essentially allows us to look at on page 6, line 11, essentially, that allows us to look at an insurer's profitability, investment income, and surplus. As I testified several weeks ago when we talked about this, I think there are differences of opinion about how to perform rate review, and there are some that would say that you should strictly look at a line of business, and that's all you should look at in a rate filing, and I believe you should look broader than that, but that is a difference of opinion, and when I met with Providence, we talked about that, and I think we sort of agreed to disagree on that piece, but I respect where they're coming from on that as well.
So along those lines, I guess assume that from the insurance division's point of view and perhaps from the consumer's point of view, it's ultimately extremely important that insurance carriers remain solvent enough to pay the claims.
Absolutely.
And so I'm assuming that particular provision speaks to that philosophy a little bit.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think we have other provisions that speak to that. Specifically, on page 7, line 20K, whether the proposed rate change is necessary to maintain the insurer's solvency or to maintain rate stability, I think that speaks to that issue. So we would be looking at both and regularly do.
Okay, thank you. Not seeing any other questions for Ms. Miller, thank you very much for your testimony today. And I believe I'm in public hearing right now.
Yes.
So I'm going to, committee, I think it's my intent to go ahead and adopt the Dash 5 amendment right now. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3145 and open a work session on House Bill 3145. Mr. Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Dash 5 amendment to 3155, House 40. Bill 3145.
Representative Riley moves the Dash 5 amendment be adopted to House Bill 3145. Discussion? Is there objection to the Dash 5? Seeing none at this point, Representative Riley. The Dash 5 is adopted. Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, does this have a subsequent?
No.
Mr. Chair, I move the House bill.
Oh, excuse me. We're not moving.
You have no fiscal, right?
No. No, we're not moving the bill. Excuse me. I went a little too far. We have adopted the Dash 5s to 3145. And with that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 3145. Gave everybody a scare there, including myself.
Just doing my job.
So, with that, okay. I'm going to recess for about 5 minutes. I mean, this is pretty quick, but what the hell. I'd like to reconvene the House Committee on Consumer Protection. And just to reiterate, we are carrying over House Bill 2141, House Bill 2189, House Bill 2199, House Bill 3145, House Bill 2366, House Bill 3004, House Bill 2370, House Bill 2784.
That's it.
And
I want to remind the committee that we're meeting tomorrow evening.
For the committee's...
You can't pass anything because...
I'm not passing anything. For the committee's indulgence, we are meeting tomorrow night. And with
So, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, we're carrying over 2366 also.
That is correct.
Okay. That was the only one I didn't have. Thank you.
So with that, I'm going to close the House Committee on Consumer Protection.